From SBR News, this is Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. This week, an eclectic mix of interviews. Who decides how much your house and property are worth, which in turn determines how much you pay in property taxes? That's the job of county assessors. Spokane's version is Tom Conis, who tells us about that process. Last week, we learned about how hospital administrators in Ritzville are working to keep their facility open. Today, we talk with two members of a citizens group that's trying to educate the public about rural health care challenges. And we meet with Kent Crayford from Seaport Airlines, a commercial airliner that recently began flying its Spokane to Seattle route in and out of Phelps and Boeing Fields. Crayford shares the benefits for travelers to smaller airports. Today's Inland Journal is ready for takeoff. Last week, we talked with Todd Nida, the chief executive of East Adams Rural Healthcare, that's the hospital in Ritzville, about its tenuous financial position. You can hear that interview at our website, SpokanePublicRadio.org. This week, we meet with two people who are paying close attention to what's going on at that hospital and others in eastern Washington.
So I'm Dr. Pam Kohlmeyer, or Dr. Pam, and I'm a physician and an attorney. I practiced emergency medicine for about 15 years, went to law school at Gonzaga, and worked for the Medical Commission for 2.5 years. I worked as their policy manager and also taught for Eastern Washington University. I taught health policy and law for the Master Public Health Program.
This is Mike Bell.
I'm a retired CPA. I spent 35 years working with small rural hospitals. At the time I retired, I employed 20 CPAs, and we covered 14 states and worked with several hundred hospitals and several hundred clinics and nursing homes.
Bell and Kohlmeyer represent a group called Prosperity Eastern Washington.
We've raised $91,000. We put up 13 billboards throughout Eastern Washington, I mean, all the way down to Clarkston, up to Colville, you name it, with not, like, endorsing one candidate, no. Not saying how you should vote, no. About get on the website, prosperityewa.com. There's accurate information there. Stay up to date and use your critical thinking to respond.
One of the billboards was in Ritzville. Mike Bell believes that hospital and a handful of others in eastern Washington may be in financial trouble.
I went to the state website and got their year-end reports and then did some analysis on what effect is the Big Beautiful Bill going to have on these hospitals. I identified several that were having financial difficulties. Two of them had not filed their mandatory year-end reports in 3 years. And that tells me there's a big problem. If you've gone 3 years without filing mandatory reports, there's an issue. Well, the first one was Ritzville. And I read minutes and I said, these guys are in deep trouble. The other one was a couple hours north of here, and they had not filed in 3 years. And I went up to have a community meeting. No board members showed up, but one of the ladies said, I know two of the board members. I said, okay, well, I can't tell you what effect the Big Beautiful Bill is going to have on your hospital because you haven't filed these mandatory reports in 3 years. So I would ask the board members, where are those mandatory reports and what are you hiding? Because you don't just stop filing these reports unless there's something going on. 6 weeks later, they filed the reports, and 6 weeks later, we got an answer. They were burning through about $2 million in cash each year. For the previous 3 years, they've got a new administrator now. So that hospital was pretty much the same thing as Ritzville, except they're still around. I mean, they identified the problem before it got critical. After I reviewed the rural hospitals, I took a look at the urban hospitals in the 5th Congressional District, and I was shocked to find out that the four big hospitals in Spokane lost $2 million each year between 22, 23, and 24. And I don't know about 25 because those reports haven't been filed with the state yet, but that's how do you sustain that kind of loss knowing that the Big Beautiful Bill is going to cost these hospitals another $100 million a year?
My mom actually died when we lived in a small town, not in Washington, but we were in Manson, Iowa. And one night she collapsed, and volunteer ambulance crew, closest hospital was 19 miles away because our town didn't have a hospital, and she died. So I do understand the impact of not having a hospital when you need one.
So tell me about your organization.
So Prosperity Eastern Washington was actually started by two 80-year-old plus women, Shirley and Roz, Shirley Grossman and Roz Luther. They're like dynamos. And they were just scared for what's happening to rural health. And they pulled together people that they knew, and they have hundreds, if not thousands and thousands of friends. Pulled in Mike as a retired CPA, me as a ER doctor. We have educators and you name it. There's a group of about 12 of us that meets at least every week. And our goal was to get accurate information to these small towns, because what we found is most of the people in the towns don't realize whether or not their hospital is healthy, like financially viable, and a lot of them weren't. And so this was a way to get people to raise their own awareness so they could use their own critical thinking and then make decisions about reaching out to hospital administrators, reaching out to elected officials, like what the hell's going on.
The billboard in Ritzville, what has happened because of it?
Yeah, so that billboard went up, I want to say around September. It was in the fall, September, October. And it says, how far to care when your hospital closes. And the phone call was ringing off the hook with the CEO's office at Ritzville saying, please. And then they reached out to us and said, please take the billboard down because people are calling asking what's going on with the hospital. And people had no idea that the hospital was at risk. And so we decided as a group, okay, we'll soften it with one word. How far to care if the hospital closes? And still, shortly after that, the article came out in the Spokesman Review about Ritzville's hospital being really in a bad spot, about how they gave pink slips basically to almost their entire staff because it looked like they were going to have to close the hospital at the beginning of this year. And they ended up getting some emergency funds from the state. They're in the process of trying to become a rural emergency hospital. But that billboard raised awareness. And then people started showing up in the community trying to get more information and try to act.
These hospitals are critical to these small communities, not only for healthcare, but from an economic standpoint. If you lay off somebody at the hospital, you're going to lay off somebody else in town. So Ritzville was talking at one time about laying off 100 people. Imagine if 100 people at the hospital are laid off and another 100 in town from restaurants, from banks, from all the businesses. Yep, the schools. Mm-hmm. And so it would be devastating for that community. And the same is true with all the other hospitals. So it's a critical part. It's usually the biggest employer in a rural community.
So do you think people are asking the right questions now that you have raised a lot of the issues and the awareness?
I was interviewed when the Big Beautiful Bill came out by a spokesman, a reporter. And after we talked, I said, you need to go talk to the chief financial officers in these rural communities and let them tell you what effect it's going to have. And the answer we got was, we did. And every one of the CFOs, without an exception, said, we're not sure. We don't know. It's too early to tell. We haven't really talked to the community about it. And I told the reporter, I said, I worked with a lot of those guys. They're not stupid. They had an estimate the day that bill was signed. They do not want to tell the community. They don't want to tell the board in some cases. But the Big Beautiful Bill, nationwide, it basically allowed the federal government to save $917 billion and forced local communities to pick up the tab. So there's no overall cost savings. It's a shift from the federal government to the local communities. And when you're in a small rural hospital and your community is going to have to provide $500,000 to $1 million more of free health care, where's that money coming from? Well, you're either going to have to raise taxes or cut back on services, which a lot of them can't cut back any further than they already have, or become a rural emergency hospital, which is basically nothing but a rural emergency room.
That is the route East Adams in Ritzville has taken. And speaking of East Adams, we asked Chief Executive Todd Nida about Prosperity Eastern Washington. He praised the organization's messaging, saying the community has become more engaged. He says that has allowed his team to share the hospital's story with more people and to build more community support. Every June, Spokane County Assessor Tom Conis sends out postcards to property owners. Those cards tell the story about how much their homes and land are worth, which in turn determines how much you pay in property taxes that year. Tom Conis joins us to talk about what his office does and how they value your property.
So how do your assessors, what are the factors they look at when determining how to put a cash value to that?
Number one, we start with sales, of course, within given neighborhoods, geographic type neighborhoods. Depending on how your neighborhood is, if there are enough sales, we will just use sales from inside your neighborhood. There are some neighborhoods, of course, that don't have sufficient amount of sales. So sometimes we do have to go outside the normal boundaries of a neighborhood, especially more in the rural stuff.
So sales set the market price.
Exactly.
So the assessment is essentially what the market price is.
Correct.
The,
and so we would take those sales and establish, okay, this is what it sold for per square foot for this style of house. And that's what we try to compare your house to a similar style of house, both age, shape, size, you know, so you don't have a two-story being compared to a rancher or a split entry being compared to a four-level. Those are some of the hardest things. We have a number of different house classes that we keep track of. And so, yeah, then we will take that factor and apply it to all of the properties.
So we hear those of us who watch HGTV hear the term curb appeal. Mm-hmm. How much does yard and the way, you know, the outside of a house looks like? Because you can't go inside. How do you determine what you know, if you've got a rundown house versus a very well kept house on the same block,
right? Unfortunately, you're right. We don't have enough people to get inside houses, and number two, people aren't home a lot now anymore. You know, during the day, we have about 220,000 parcels that we are responsible for. They're real property parcels, of which we have to physically inspect 1/6 of those every year. So it's a pretty daunting task. Yes, for 16 appraisers. So the curb appeal does make a big difference to us because all we're getting is a view from the street.
So your assessors might go out and park in front of a house with a checklist. Mm-hmm. And what's on the checklist then?
Yeah, we're looking for new roof, any additions, things to that effect, and just, like I say, just general maintenance. And we just make that the assumption if you're maintaining the outside, you're also maintaining the inside. We do have aerial imaging that we have flown countywide every other year, similar to Google. And we are looking now at a street imaging program that will also be able to do that and give us a little more up-to-date numbers than what we can do just with our appraisers out on the street. But
so you say look at the roof. Is there a standard amount that you add on? It looks like a new roof. Here's $2,000 we add on to that.
We would update the age typically a year or two. Because it's going to make it now last longer because it's protected. Mm. Same thing with new windows and things of that effect. Those things help protect the inside. I will tell people that when you do get your notice from us and you're going to get one in the first week of June, you're going to get another card for an envelope from me. If you disagree with the value that's on there, the first thing to do is call the appraiser. Their number, their name, everything is right on the notice. Give them a call because we aren't inside properties. If there's something inside that we don't know about, please help us out. I mean, we're only as good as the data we have.
Will you go if people invite you inside their
Absolutely.
Houses?
Okay. Absolutely.
All right. So then they take the appraisal in and they put it in their computer. Is there some sort of market correction sort of thing, or is it just sort of an automatic, okay, here are the additions. Here's what I think the assessment needs to
right.
increase by.
And again, we do market adjustments, neighborhood adjustments, because, of course, different parts of even Spokane County move at different rates. So, yeah, there are a number of adjustments that are factored in.
So different neighborhoods might increase at
different rates,
varying rates.
Right, right. Increase or decrease.
Oh.
You know, it
happens. Are there decreases occasionally?
There are. Actually, currently what we are looking at is about a 1% plus or minus for our are changes this year. So yeah, there will be houses that will be going down.
They've gone up.
Not a lot. They've gone up a lot.
They've gone up an awful lot lately, over the last several years.
I don't disagree. It was, in my opinion, an ugly market for Spokane. Just moved too fast. We've historically, I've been doing this for 33 years now. Historically, we use move at 1% to 3%. And it's just a nice gradual climb. And it worked out well for everybody. That during COVID, especially right in that time where there was so much pent-up demand, and we had a lot of people moving from out of the area into here that drove up our prices and the demand. It was just hard market for a lot of people. Hard for a homeowner, because then there was that increase in property taxes that comes about, because now your value instead of being at $300,000 is at $500,000. Even though your taxes aren't directly tied to the increase, it still increases your tax burden. It was hard on everybody. It's hard on the builders. It's hard. Everybody's has been struggling. So I'm glad that we're getting back to more of a normal Spokane market.
So your assessors create the valuations for the houses. What happens to those valuations then in terms of how it turns into the tax that you're asked to pay?
Washington is a budget-based tax system or an initiative-based tax system, basically. So we have two different types of taxes. The municipalities, City of Spokane, Spokane County, City of the Valley, are all limited to a 1% increase in their budget per year by law. Without a vote of the people, that's all they can do. The other half of the pie, though, are the school districts and the fire districts and the other entities that go out for ballot measures. And we want good schools. We want the fire department to come when we call. So therefore, we're voting in things that are also adding to our tax burden. On my personal house, 46% of my tax goes to just schools, between the local school district and the state school portion. It would be nice if we had another way to fund them, but that's really the only entity that we have at this point in time.
When are your folks out? Because you said you're going to get a postcard from us in June. Right. So do your assessors, are they out there doing their work all year long, and they just kind of they just get them in when they can?
No, we start in September physically inspecting. We were done this year just a little bit after into January, and so now they are doing the statistical updating in the office at this point in time. And going back, if there's a question on a property, okay, why did this one not move, or why did it sell for what it sold for? Can we go back? They'll go back and look at those, but.
You talked about if people dispute their assessment, is there an appeals process, or is it just you prefer just to work with them one-on-one, or do they have then future appeals options?
There are definitely appeal options. Like I say, first off, start with the appraiser. If you don't get a satisfactory answer, there is what's called the Board of Equalization, which is a separate board that is appointed by the county commissioners. It's totally separate from my office, and it is basically a quasi-judicial board where – once you have filed your appeal and they set your appeal date, you will be able to turn in evidence supporting what you think the value should be. My appraisers would turn in evidence to what they think the value is, or to support the value they have, or a different one. And then the board would decide what the answer would be. If you're still not happy with the local board's decision, there's also a state board of tax appeals you can appeal to. So there are a number of different things. And none of this costs any money, just some time.
How often does this happen?
We do about 800 appeals a year. The nice thing about it is we settle about 70% of those every year before they go to a hearing even.
Okay.
So the appraisers really do listen to what people are saying. And, no one knows their house as well as the person living there. But it's also, especially when we were having that appreciating market, it would surprise people that truly that's how much it went up. So
clearly you believe in this system of assessment.
I do. I think it's pretty fair.
Yeah, make the case for folks why you think this is a good system.
Our challenge in our office is to make sure that everybody's being treated fairly, and that they're paying their fair share of this tax burden that we all have, but no more, but no less either. So that's the biggest thing. And this is a way we can do that with our current system.
Tom Conis is the assessor in Spokane County. Last month, Seaport Airways began a new Spokane to Seattle route. What's unusual is the flights do not use the city's two main airports. It's a Feltsfield to Boeing Field route using the city's two older airports. Seaport founder and CEO Kent Crayford says two flights leave Feltsfield each day and two leave Boeing Field.
Our whole value proposition is to get people from Spokane to Seattle, allow them to do a full day's business, and still get back home to Spokane, Northern Idaho for dinner. So our whole the whole concept behind Seaport is cutting the travel time in half so you can do a day's business in a day and have same day business trips again, not need to do an overnight. At the same time, we have people that have gone already from Boeing Field in Seattle to Spokane to drive up to the mountain to ski. We've had people flying to Seattle for hockey games and baseball, most recently with opening day. We've had people going back and forth for, you know, vacations and going traveling to their second homes. We actually found out that there's 7,000 second home owners in Eastern Washington, Northern Idaho with Puget Sound addresses, if you can believe that. And so there's a lot of people moving back and forth for all sorts of reasons. We actually have a customer who flies between Seattle and Portland with us that is 14 years old, and she's going back and forth between her mom's house and her dad's house. That was never in our original business plan. So the point is that you never quite know, you know, who's going to get on the airplane. But that's the beauty of it, is that anybody can get on the airplane. It's just an airline like any other. You just buy a seat. And so anybody for any reason can travel between Boeing Field and Feltsfield and Spokane. We're here for everybody.
I mean, it's a very romantic notion to jump on the airplane. You know, you don't have to wait for your baggage and all that sort of stuff. But is there enough business? Is it romantic enough that you're going to be able to continue to make a living at it 5 years down the road?
Well, that's up to the people of Spokane and Seattle, I guess, to determine. I mean, we think so because travel is so broken now. You know, I started in this business in 2008. I mean, I was still using a Palm Pilot, I think, or maybe I moved on to a BlackBerry by then. Today, in the palm of my hand, I've got a supercomputer that within seconds, I can pull up all the information in the history of the world. And yet, there's one aspect of society that we have become conditioned to accept will only get worse every year, and that's travel. It was easier to get between Spokane and Seattle 20 years ago than it is today. I would argue that it was even easier potentially to get between Seattle and Spokane 50 years ago than it is today. The reality is that air traffic has become so clogged by having to go through this one-size-fits-all mega airport at SeaTac. And ground transportation is, you know, at least over the pass, you know, having to drive over the pass is just as unreliable as it's ever been in the wintertime, at least. And so I don't think we should have to accept that. You know, innovation is possible. And all we're doing is taking alternative airfields, Feltsfield, Boeing Field. We're right-sizing the infrastructure with the distance that you're traveling. We're using smaller aircraft that fall outside of TSA, so you don't have any of that friction. We have on-site parking, so you can park right in front of the terminal for free, walk in 20 minutes before your flight and go. And we provide enough flight frequency that it's a, you know, virtual conveyor belt in the sky, so you can get over and back. The thing that gives me the greatest encouragement to answer your question, Doug, is that I see it on the faces of our customers every day. Once they do it, they come back. And so our challenge is not the product. The product sells itself. It's just an awareness challenge. You know, we just need to make more people aware of it. Once they become aware of it, once they try it, once they do it, they stay doing it.
Are there other markets that you think make sense? Boise, Tri-Cities, Moses Lake, Bellingham, I don't know.
We have ideas on additional markets. I mean, at the same time, you know, our eponymous route, Seattle-Portland, we're still building that. We've put a lot of investment into Spokane. You're going to see a lot more marketing and advertising here in Spokane. We've got a new campaign just launching this week. So we want to build those routes. We want to build that up. We take a long view of this. You know, we've been in business for 29 years. Seaport is an extension of Alaska Seaplanes, which is a long-time regional airline based in Juneau, Alaska. And we take the view that it takes 3 years to develop a route. You got to put some time into it. It doesn't happen overnight. You got to build it. The awareness takes a while to develop. And then even after people become aware of it, they need to have a reason to use it. And then finally, you got to break people of their habits. A lot of people are in the habit of just jumping in their car to Seattle. And you got to say, hey, why don't you try flying? And they might say, well, I've done the flight. And once you go through SeaTac, it's such a pain in the butt. I'd just rather drive. And like, hey, no. Well, we fly to Boeing Field in Seattle, you know? So you got to go through that whole conversation too. So it takes time. And we take a long view of it. But so for now, we're sticking to our knitting. We're focused on Spokane. We're focused on Portland. At the same time, we're always keeping our eyes open for future growth. And we do have some ideas on where that could be.
I'm curious as to how the TSA situation has affected your business since you don't have TSA agents.
It's certainly brought a stark contrast between Seaport, which operates outside of TSA, and the major airlines, which operate, of course, inside of SeaTac and inside of TSA. TSA is a huge friction point for the major airlines and the major airports. You know, it's not as bad in places like Spokane, of course, where you can zip through security relatively quickly. But these mega airports, like you see on the news, JFK and Houston and SeaTac, of course, is becoming a mega airport. It's a huge airport that's way oversubscribed. It's well beyond its design capacity. They added a third runway. They should have added a fourth. They added five gates. They really needed 50 more. They need not only one, but probably two additional freeways to connect to it. They need four times the parking garages they've got. They need more roadway access. They need more. They just need more. The problem with airports like SeaTac, though, is that that's their only strategy. More, bigger. And that strategy really leaves short distance air travel routes like Seattle to Spokane in the dust, because those one size fits all infrastructure strategies, they make a lot of sense if you're traveling across country or if you're traveling, you know, across the globe, but it doesn't make much sense if you're going only a couple hundred miles, you know? And so that's all Seaport does, is we just right-size the experience. And so we do away with the mega airport by operating out of Boeing Field in Seattle, which is, you know, you could park your car, walk about 50 feet into the building, and then walk another 50 feet out to the airplane, no TSA. And so, you know, all the hubbub about TSA right now, it just really draws an even sharper contrast between the major airlines.
That's Kent Crayford, the founder and CEO of Seaport Airways, which recently began a Felts Field to Boeing Field daily route. Next week on Inland Journal, we'll talk with NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik, who is coming to Spokane for an SPR event on April 14th. Inland Journal is the weekly public affairs program produced at SPR News. Hear it on the radio every Thursday at 12:30, Saturday at 2:30, or online anytime at SpokanePublicRadio.org. And that's where you can find SPR News Today, the daily news podcast hosted by Owen Henderson. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Thank you for joining us.